You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Alert, alert, clear all channels.
Fresh from America's Dairyland,
ladies and gentlemen.
From the Benches Podcast.
Touchdown, Packers.
Go Packers!
Packers Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to From the Benches with Ross Uglum and Ryan Hilsland.
Hello and welcome back to From the Benches. We are once again an apologetic crew. I am Ross Uglum. I'm a writer at PackersTalk.com. And with me, as always, is Ryan Hilsland. Ryan, how are you and why wasn't there a show last week?
Oh, I'm doing great now. Might seem like we just don't like having shows after disappointing losses.
That's because we don't!
We don't, but also we have, when we're both at games, we're both at the Lions game at Lambeau, it makes for difficult scheduling with Ross. You drove all the way back to northwestern Minnesota after the game. I obviously went south to Milwaukee. Makes for a difficult podcast record. And then during the week, I work a weird schedule, and it's kind of difficult to work around. And when you have to sit down and talk about a game like that against the Lions, you don't really try all that hard to make a tough schedule situation work out.
Yeah, it's probably true. But as always, you know, we just do this for you, the fans, and we do apologize that we were not able to give the people what they wanted last week. I'm sure the Packers Talk Network was able to provide you guys with plenty of complaining and hard-hitting analysis.
Lots of hot takes.
Yeah, and no shortage of people turning on each other whatsoever. Speaking of that, we're going to head straight to the news. The Packers did lose to the Lions at Lambeau for the first time, and it was either 23 or 24 years. Obviously, that was a streak that was more of a joke than a point of pride, but still, it's tough to see that go down against such a poor Lions team as opposed to some of the half-decent operations in the Ndamukong Suh era that rolled into Lambeau, and Green Bay was still able to get a victory. So to have that streak fall to a Lions team that wasn't very good in the middle of a season with Super Bowl expectations or aspirations is tough. And then after that, everything kind of went weird. And this has been covered sort of ad nauseum, but certainly the media and the fans and the bloggers, I would have to say, didn't handle a three-game losing streak well. Wouldn't you have to say, Ryan?
No, I don't think they did. Before you dive into that, I saw someone, I forget who it was now, I apologize for not crediting, but someone tweeting that, you know, if this is what happens after a three-game losing streak in the middle of the season, what would have modern-day Twitter look like during the Favre fiasco that summer? It would have been a disaster, methinks.
I agree, and even what would have been like if we had Twitter in the late 80s, you know, I mean,
right.
This, maybe, you know, I don't like to bag on the fans, maybe we are a little bit spoiled, but specifically, much of the vitriol was towards ESPN's Rob Domofsky. He kind of wrote a little what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers' blog post. It was a 5-point post, and the fifth post was, And he kind of did the Bob McGinn thing where he blamed his source and said, well, a guy that I talked to says that maybe he's having trouble with Olivia, and which means, no, really, you're putting that in your article. You're saying that. And he's right. I mean, we don't know what's going on at home, but that's not an appropriate supposition.
We don't know what's going on in anyone's home.
Right, exactly.
We don't know what's going on in Mike Daniels' home. We don't know what's going on in Eddie Lacy's home. We've got no idea.
It's not okay to go at someone's significant other in the media. It's just random, I think, and probably not too well thought out by Rob. And I have a lot of respect for Rob. I think he does a decent job, so we're not going to probably go into it any further than that. I call it a mistake, and I think he's a fine journalist, and I have no issue with Rob whatsoever. And then things got a little bit personal in the media when TJ Lang, who, if you're listening, TJ, unblock me. Dude, I don't know what I did, but I'm a big fan. I don't think I've ever said a mean word about you, and I can't read your tweets, bro, and that makes me sad. So this is my official shout to TJ Lang to unblock me. TJ Lang tweeted out that Tom Silverstein was, or not that Tom Silverstein, he didn't call him out by name. Right, he didn't name names, but it was eventually kind of figured out that Tom Silverstein had called a Packer player's parents to kind of ask them what was wrong, and that he had also, asked the player for permission to speak to the parents, which wasn't true. At the same time, credit, or maybe not credit, but giving Tom the benefit of the doubt, he has denied, these allegations and said that, that wasn't maybe exactly the way that it went down. At no rate, Cheesehead TV's Aaron Nagler made a comment, or actually retweeted a joke from another Packers blogger, and Tom Silverstein went right for the throat, told Aaron to basically stick to blogging, called him a fan, told him he didn't know anything about journalism. We've had Aaron on this show. I have a ton of respect for him. I think he kind of took the high road, to be honest with you. They had an episode of Packer Transplants, he and Corey, that night. They addressed it. Aaron certainly could have fired back at Tom. I would certainly qualify Aaron Nagler as a journalist, but it just kind of got ugly. And like we just said, this three-game losing streak really was kind of tough on everyone.
Yeah. I mean, what else can you say? The fans didn't take it well. The people covering the team didn't take it well, and I don't think the team took it well. It was a bad streak. You lose to two tough teams on the road. You kind of assume you're going to have a get healthy kind of game at home against a bad team, and then you lay another egg, and all of a sudden the sky is falling. But it's not the end of the world. Sometimes you come back and you go and win a game on the road.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what just happened. Despite not being favored for the first time this season, Green Bay went into Minnesota and kind of laid the smack down. They won by 17. It was 30-13 Packers. The offense was not clicking on maybe all cylinders. Part of that has to do probably with facing the number two scoring defense in the league. But they put up 30 points. Eddie Lacy kind of got back to form, and the defense was absolutely dominant. Green Bay held Minnesota to only two scores. Blair Walsh missed an extra point, so those were your 13 points. That's it, and that's obviously great for the Packers and good for the fans and good for you and me. Let's just grab quick thoughts on that Lions loss. You and I were both there. Let's talk about it briefly and move on. Ryan, you go first.
Well, obviously tough to watch. We, like you said, we were in attendance, and I always get a little bit of a weird, or not a weird, a different vibe when I'm at the game. I've never really seen the Packers struggle in person, especially not to that degree. And it just kind of always seemed that the offense was like, all right, whatever, we'll get the next drive, something's going to come. something's going to happen, and you just ran out of time. Eventually, you looked up at the scoreboard, and it was late in the fourth quarter, and holy shit, we gotta make something happen here. And I do think the defense started to show their improvement in that game. I think the defense played very well, and that led into today's game against the Vikings. But the offense looked just all sorts of out of sync. Nothing looked right. Nobody was doing the normal things that you're used to seeing out of the Packers offense, especially at home at Lambeau Field. It was a tough game to watch. Like I said, it just kind of seemed like, all right, like we're going to get it going. Like it's going to come. It'll come. It'll come, and all of a sudden it's the fourth quarter, and you're relying on a missed extra point and an onside kick, and getting a 2-point conversion and scrambling to get a field goal late in the game, and obviously the field goal gets kind of shanked as Crosby's rushing to get that field goal in at the end of the game. But it was a weird game to watch, especially in person. It was strange, but like I said, the defense kind of got back to form in that game. That carried over, which is very nice to see. The offense was very concerning at that point. Looks like we were maybe trending in the right direction after the game today in Minnesota. We'll obviously talk about that a little as we go on here, but that Lions game was strange.
It certainly was. It looked like such a continuation of the early game struggles against Denver and Carolina, but without the opposing team having that talent level. It was certainly frustrating, especially when you consider how well that first drive went and the strategies on that first drive that were used, the screen game, the slant game, just difficult to understand why they were so ineffective, and certainly ineffective running the ball. Even against a struggling pass defense like the Lions, it's hard to ask a beat-up Aaron Rodgers to throw the ball, 61 times. I mean, it just was unnecessary, and it was just a hard way to watch them lose for sure. Obviously, it all would have been for naught if that field goal would have gone in. You and I'd be sitting here and talking about an 8-2 football team, and right now we're 7-3, and that's quite a bit better than places that Green Bay has been in the last 4 years. Obviously, 2011 was about best case scenario as far as the regular season's concerned, but 7-3 with two very winnable games back to back, and then still home again after that to Dallas. So this is part of that 28th ranked schedule going forward that Green Bay has now is winnable games, and hopefully this win against a good team will push the Packers forward. Ryan, let's dive into this Minnesota win since it's so much more fun to talk about.
Right.
The pass rush looked awesome today. Looked like the beginning of the season. Looked like the defense that we felt could carry this team as the offense finds itself. 6 sacks today. They held Adrian Peterson under 50 yards, made him, lose a fumble, and that was not just a whoopsie fumble. That was an absolute forced fumble by Morgan Burnett. Great to see. Obviously, you and I, not huge Adrian Peterson fans. It was fun to see him struggle, and certainly fun to watch the Vikings struggle so mightily to score points. Ryan, talk to me a little bit about the defense, and why don't you talk about Mike Daniels so that I can talk about Dayton Jones?
Those two guys are really the catalyst. And it was just so strange to see them disappear in that little 3-game stretch against the Broncos, Panthers, and Lions. 0 sacks in those 3 games combined after going like 40, I think it was like 43 straight games with a sack. And the way the pass rush had performed in those first 6 games, sack numbers, I think it was like 7 against the Chiefs, 5 against the 5 in a different game. Second in the league going in sacks going into that Denver game, and then you go 3 games in a row without recording a sack. it was strange, especially considering, you know, how good we think, like you said, how good we think Mike Daniels is. Mike Daniels was a freak today. He bottled up Adrian Peterson. You know, like you said, he struggled a little bit. They're quite a bit today. Mike Daniels met him in the backfield quite a bit. He had maybe one of my favorite sacks this season, where he just drove the guard back into Teddy Bridgewater and basically tackled both of them together. That was, I mean, just pay the man. That's the Mikey Daniels special. He makes guards look silly, and you know when he's on, when he does stuff like that, he makes a huge difference in this defense. You know, disrupting plays in the backfield, getting to the quarterback from that 3-4 defensive end position. He's a huge difference maker on this defense, and he played great today, and it showed, and it was a huge reason why the Vikings struggled to score. And you know, you're going to talk about Dayton Jones. Clay Matthews also had a big game. Had a kind of a bad miss on Teddy Bridgewater on a third down scramble, but then came back right on the next play, stuffed Adrian Peterson for a loss. Clay played really well. Again, he's the MVP of the defense pretty much every time he steps out there, and he continues to play well that inside linebacker spot. But yeah, it's on the defensive line. It's Mike Daniels and Dayton Jones. What'd you think about Dayton today?
I was so impressed. And yeah, that Mike Daniels sack where he tackled both him and the guard, that's on the Brian Mackler highlight film that he's going to go ahead and show to Russ Ball and Ted Thompson when they sit down and sit down and discuss the terms of negotiation. Certainly, Dayton Jones, though, he's another guy that the Packers are going to have a fifth-year option on that everybody sort of assumed, you know, like Nick Perry, wasn't going to be exercised, and that might happen now. I mean, I think they'd want to keep Dayton Jones around. Interior pass rushers are so hard to find. They actually used him a little bit at outside linebacker. You know, he's never, ever, ever going to be in coverage, but...
he was standing up on his first sack today, I believe.
Right. I mean, the idea of, like, well, I mean, Adrian Peterson's completely worthless in pass protection, but the whiff on him was, that's the kind of stuff that can happen. You can't have a running back chip Dayton Jones. I mean, it's just not going to go well. Now, there are tons of running backs in the league, almost all of them, that chip better than Adrian Peterson does, but that's just not a matchup that you can get. So I kind of like Dayton outside, but a two-sack performance today, continuing on this breakout third-year season, looking like a winner. And honestly, I would be very comfortable locking up that triumvirate of Jones, Daniels, and Raji long-term if they can get it done. And obviously Jones, you know, that would be a deal you could do right after the season. It'd probably be very reasonable money. BJ, he's tailed off a little bit, still playing okay, but he was a dominant force at the beginning of the season. His deal could probably be pretty reasonable. And then you got to pay the man Mike Daniels. And that's fine, though. If you have three defensive linemen that you really like and want to go forward with, you know, paying one of them is okay. Plus, you got to think at the same time, as much as we love him, I haven't seen Julius Peppers make a play in a while, and his money's probably coming off the books pretty soon. That was a contract that was structured to give the Packers a lot of flexibility when, you know, Julius was 35, 36, 37. He might not be with the team next year, as rough as that sounds, but because of Dayton Jones, because of Nick Perry, honestly, because of Jake Ryan, even though they won't let him play, that Julius Peppers is maybe a little bit more expendable. Yeah, certainly. That's the word I'm looking for. A little bit more expendable. Ryan, speaking of returning to form, let's talk a little bit about Eddie Lacy and what we saw from him today after getting shut down for that Detroit game. He didn't look any slimmer, and that's because he's been the exact same weight, the exact same build since he came in the league. And all you people calling him fat, I just have no time for you. But he looked more spry. The spin move was working today. Was averaging, I'm not sure what he finished with, because I think some of those runs where we were in 22 personnel and they had all the guys in the box kind of cranked his average down, I'm guessing. But while the game was still in question, he was well over 5 yards a clip.
Yeah, he finally looked like Eddie Lacy. He finished with 22 carries for 100 yards, so just a shade under 5 yards to carry for the game as a whole. But finally looked like himself. He early in the game there was a play that he took a handoff, bounced it outside, and kind of got chased down for a loss. That at that point it kind of looked like the Eddie Lacy we had been seeing in the early part of the season, who was banged up with injuries and not really looking like himself. But then for the rest of the game, he turned it on. Like you said, the spin move was working. He made someone look silly in the hole on a spin move. Ended up going and getting 5-6 more yards, and he was a big reason the Packers offense finally kind of got it going a little bit. Starks looked decent at the beginning. Had a couple good runs right away. Only finished with 8 carries for 14 yards. So not a lot of James Starks happening today. It was the Eddie Lacy show again, like Packer fans are used to seeing. And it obviously good to see. That's going to need to continue. That's going to need to keep going. We're going to need to have a running game as a threat with Lacy. Because, like we're going to talk about in a little bit, the passing game wasn't super sharp again. And, having Lacy back there as a threat gives Aaron Rodgers in the passing game a little bit more flexibility, a little more breathing room, a little more margin for error. When you're dealing with second and four, third and two, it's a lot easier than second and eight, third and nine. Which happens when you have Eddie Lacy getting stuffed in the hole like he had been for several weeks prior to this game. So it was good to see Lacy get back, Lacy making a difference, pounding some yardage, looking like himself, breaking tackles, and finishing runs. It was very refreshing from one of my favorite players on the team, one of my favorite guys to watch. It was nice to see him come back and be himself.
I agree, and it was so important to the entire offense, as it always is, especially you see, Minnesota, that double A-gap blitz. You can't run that stuff in third and short and third medium, although third and short was kind of a bugaboo today for the Packers. But staying out of third and a million turned a lot of what goes on with at least that Zimmer defense into some four-man rush stuff. And I know that the book on Aaron Rodgers forever and ever and ever is rush four, play coverage, and just make him take what's there, and hopefully it's not a bomb over the top. But teams this year, because he can't run around like normal, because I think he's a little bit hurt, and because the Packers aren't running the ball, teams are just blitzing the bejesus out of blitzing the bejesus out of Aaron Rodgers, and Mike Zimmer was not able to do that today, or at least he didn't do it today. I noticed tons and tons of four-man rush stuff, and I think a lot of that had to do with a decent establishment of Eddie Lacy in the run game. I certainly am going to wait until the Thanksgiving game to completely believe. But I always thought it was more feasible that he was hurt and that something was wrong than that he just wasn't good, because we've seen 32, 33 tapes plus all of his college tape that would indicate that he's not a bad football player. So those are kind of my thoughts on Lacy. Ryan, let's dive behind the benches now and talk some real X's and O's and talk about the offense that Green Bay seems to go into and be successful with when Aaron Rodgers is hurt, and that being the pistol formation, of which we saw plenty today.
Yeah, we saw Rodgers show up on the injury report this week. Obviously, wasn't enough to keep him out of the game. He played and looked not great, but like you said, when Rodgers is a little bit hurt, they throw him in that pistol formation. It lets him make his drops with fewer steps. He gets the ball step or two into his drop, and you can still employ that that downhill, either right or left run threat from Eddie Lacy from the pistol, as opposed to in the shotgun formation when the defense kind of knows which in the general direction the run game is coming from. But in the pistol, you get a little bit of the best of both worlds. You allow Rodgers to start back in his break a little bit. You put a little less pressure on his legs, and you still keep the running game as a threat. It worked all right today. Obviously, we just talked about the running game being effective finally, and Rodgers looked a little bit more comfortable, I think. Not necessarily more effective, but he'd been kind of getting happy feet over the last handful of weeks. And I think he looked more comfortable this week. Ross, what did you think?
I agreed. I love that pistol formation. I missed it. I don't know if it's just because it wasn't part of the game plan when he was healthy that they didn't, maybe they didn't invest in it as much as they could, but I just thought it was so useful. And I really liked the version of it with Ty Montgomery at fullback and Randall Cobb at tailback. That made me happy. But, until Ty gets back, that's no longer a possibility. I think it's a useful way to utilize this team's personnel. And also, I think it's easier than the shotgun trap as far as running the ball with the pin-down block from the center and the pulling guard. That doesn't seem to be a really good way to get Eddie Lacy going. And even James Starks seems to do most of his damage out of the toss game, from under center. And a lot of that stuff can be, the same concepts can be utilized in that pistol. I especially think it works well for Lacy. At the same time, I think it gives Rodgers a little bit more of a vantage point because he's not under center. He is standing up in a shotgun setting, looking over the crowd, or not over the crowd, excuse me, looking over the defense and being able to pick his spots in a similar way as he does in the shotgun. And you can see that it's easier for him, I think, to get the Packers into some better stuff from the pistol maybe than it is from under center. Now, we're still talking about an offense that utilizes the shotgun quite a bit, but, and this is going to make you about roll over in your grave, I would like to eliminate all the under center stuff, except for the 22 personnel when it's super obvious that we're running. I think we can do all of our run schemes out of pistol without really losing much of anything, even in the play action game, because I think play action out of pistol works just fine.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't be completely opposed to that. I don't know how, specifically from a play design and play calling standpoint, that would translate. But yeah, in theory, you can do pretty much everything you can do from under center from the pistol. Besides, like you said, that 22, that I formation stuff. So, if that works, if Rodgers looks more comfortable like he kind of did today, why not go into that? It clearly didn't hamper Lacy in the run game, and it made a difference with Rodgers in the passing game. So I'm not opposed to that at all. If that's what they think they need to go to, while Rodgers is maybe dealing with a little nagging, annoying injury, I'm all for that.
For sure. Let's talk about one of Rodgers's, or let's talk about Aaron Rodgers specifically right now, and then we'll talk about his top target today. James Jones, still not 100% sharp from Rodgers, still not the Aaron Rodgers that we have come to know and love. At the same time, though, damn, that throw to James Jones. And honestly, that throw to Jeff Janis was pretty impressive considering, that we think he has a lower body injury. I was pretty impressed with his play. I would as much as I dislike them and don't think very much of them as a whole, I do think that the Vikings are pretty good defensively, so that has quite a bit to do with it. But Rodgers was technically under 50% completion percentage today. He did get over 200 yards, continues to pad that in a down season, or as far as we would consider it a down season. He continues to pad that exceptional touchdown-to-interception ratio, and just isn't quite there yet, hopefully, you know, he can get healthy. I'm not sure that playing, you know, two more games in the next 10 days is going to help. But it's possible that if they can keep him relatively clean against the Bears and then relatively clean against the Lions, that, you know, Rodgers can maybe get healthy in that 10-day stretch between the Lions game and the Dallas game. Ryan, what did you see from Rodgers now, and do you think that it's possible for him to get to MVP level, or is it a weapons thing?
No, I do think it's possible. Like you said, not all that sharp today. Finished 16 out of 34, which is under 50%. Did not have a very good completion percentage against the Lions in that 61 attempt performance. But, yeah, you saw the flashes. Like you said, that throw to Jones in the side of the end zone is just vintage Rodgers, you know, moving out to his right, out of the pocket, rolling and putting a throw on the dime. That is what we're used to seeing from Aaron Rodgers. What we're not used to seeing are those little misses, those little, you know, throwing it. There was a throw to Cobb on a little in where he just threw it out of Cobb's reach. Cobb had a step on the guy. He was open, and Cobb just couldn't quite stretch out and get there enough. If you're being a really harsh grader, you maybe chalk that down as a drop to Cobb. But Cobb had a couple other drops also. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all on Rodgers. The receivers didn't haul in all the passes that were on target, but we're used to seeing Rodgers put the ball exactly where it needs to be pretty much all the time, and he just isn't doing that. He still has the big highlight plays, but he's just a little bit off, and I think part of that boils down to not having the separation, not having Jordy Nelson, you know, could be able to go back and throw a back shoulder throw to Jordy Nelson and have him, you know, make a kind of circus grab falling over to the sideline. You know, the chemistry between Jordy and Rodgers was just so underrated. You can see this season that Rodgers will throw a ball that it seems like in years past that it's a throw that he's going to make, and it's like, wow, how did he know that Jordy was going to go there? How did he anticipate? Well, it's because he has such great chemistry with Jordy Nelson. He's able to throw a ball before Jordy's even looking, knowing that Jordy's going to make a certain turn, make a break exactly a certain way, and be open. And without that there, it looks a little bit less impressive. He's trying to do those things. He's throwing balls, hoping that the younger, less experienced receivers, you know, are going to make those breaks, and they're just not quite there yet. Devontae Adams is showing some flashes, but he doesn't have that trust level and that chemistry level with Rodgers yet, which is understandable. Same thing with Richard Rodgers, just not quite there. Rodgers not able to get the...
Absolutely. It's good to, you know, at least think that we could see Rodgers back to form. Let's talk about his number. Let's talk about his two top receivers, one who had a great night and one that didn't, and one who made a hooded sweatshirt very, very famous this evening, James Jones. He had a really bad drop in the first half where Rodgers hit him on a comeback route on either a second or third and long, hit him right in the hands, and he just dropped it. But after that, James Jones was absolutely the best receiver on the Packers. He finished his day with six catches, 109 yards, and grabbed a touchdown that was an absolutely indefensible throw. You know, Rodgers with just a classic throw to the corner of the end zone and a nice grab by Jones to stay in bounds and push the Packers up by two touchdowns. And honestly, the way that the Vikings were struggling so mightily to move the ball, that was, in my opinion, the dagger, or, you know, kind of the game ender. You could argue that it was Peterson's subsequent fumble, but I think once the Packers put the Vikings down in a two-touchdown hole in the fourth quarter, you sort of knew that one was over. I was really impressed with the way that Jones got open all night long and made some pretty good catches that almost drop on the double move was a little bit, you know, skip a beat as far as your heart's concerned inducing, but that was a touch overthrown as well. I mean, he kind of needed that bobble to bring the ball back into himself. I was really impressed with what he did, and I'm also impressed that his gear choices continue to be just ridiculous. This is a guy that used to come out in a sleeveless mock turtleneck in indoor games and now rolls up to TCF Bank just wearing a hoodie under his jersey. I mean, it's like I saw a tweet, and once again, we're getting kind of bad at crediting people, but saw one fan tweet that he looked like the kid at football that can't talk his mom into buying him Under Armour, so he just wears a hoodie under his shoulder pads. It was pretty fantastic. Ryan, what were your impressions of James Jones this afternoon?
Yeah, I think it was like the second quarter when I was watching the game with my girlfriend and her family, and we kind of got to the second quarter, and we're like, is that a hood? Like, is there a hood sticking out? Like, he kind of had it hidden for the early part of the game, and then obviously it turned out to be an actual hoodie underneath his jersey. Yeah, like you said, he was big. That drop early was not ideal, but he overcame it and had some real big plays, and that's big, especially when you consider the struggles that the guy who should be the number one receiver at this point, Randall Cobb, is having. Having James Jones out there is fantastic, and it's really lucky that the Packers were able to snatch him up as a free agent right before the season started. He's been a revelation. He's been a big reason that the Packers are in a tie for first in the division. He's been big. He obviously had the big plays today. That catch on the sideline was incredible. Obviously, this throw from Rodgers was perfect. But his ability to keep both of his feet down while he made that catch was just fantastic. He's got that body control on the sideline. He's a veteran guy. He knows what he's got to do. He knows how to make the catch, keep his feet in, and complete a legal catch. You know, getting his hands underneath the ball as he gets to the ground, and kind of the same thing on that double move, almost drop that you talked about. It was the same thing. He was able to control it, get his hands underneath the ball, and secure the catch. His veteran presence is really big on this team. For an offense that has been struggling, you know, he's been a little bit hit or miss. He has some games where he's disappeared, where teams have been able to cover him up, which is understandable because he's not a physical specimen like some of the elite receiving options in the league. But he's able to he's able to get open. He's able to be that crafty veteran receiver who makes plays when you need him to. And it's really big that he's out there, not only being an impact football player, but a fashion trendsetter also.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting. As much as the pass rush going away has been, or was part of the problem and honestly came right inside with the three-game losing streak, the disappearance of James Jones kind of coincided with the three-game losing streak as well. So it's certainly good to see him get back on track. You know who's not really on track right now is Randall Cobb, and he hasn't been all season long. High expectations obviously were placed on Cobb. Could he be the guy with Jordy Nelson blowing out his knee? At the same time, I think that was maybe a little bit unfair because of the shoulder injury that he got in the preseason and came into the season hurt, played, hasn't looked quite himself. But I can't blame a shoulder injury on the drops. You know, I can certainly say he's not running quite as hard. He's not taking the same chances. He's not the same guy with the ball on his hand after the catch. But his problem right now is just getting the ball into his hands. Ryan, what do you think the problem is? What are you seeing from Randall Cobb as to why he's struggling so much catching the football? Because it's not just this game. Obviously, this game was the worst example, but this has been kind of a problem this season.
Yeah, it's tough to tell what his problem is, but he's dropping balls all over the place. He had one today where, you know, it was coming right at his face. He went up to catch it, and it just looked like he was turning to make his cut before he caught the ball. And that's not something you can do as, you know, Randall Cobb's been around for a while. He got paid to be a top receiving option, and he just is making kind of little rookie mental mistakes, and it's not something that makes you very confident in his ability going forward. Obviously, we've seen him before be a reliable receiver, but he just keeps making these little, you know, balls are going off his hands. He's not quite, like you said, the shoulder injury is hindering him a little bit. I talked a little bit earlier about that ball that was a little bit out of his reach. Maybe you think that he should catch that. Maybe Rodgers should have made a better throw. Who knows? But that's a play that maybe he makes when he's 100% healthy and when he's not coming off a shoulder injury, when he can extend a little bit and go out and get that ball. But, you know, he's dropping passes when he does, when it's situations like that. He's dropping passes when it hits him right in the hands, right in the face. It's disheartening. He really needs to play better for the offense to really get clicking. He's the guy who's been around Aaron Rodgers the most at this point. And it's really falling on him for, you know, he needs to get open. He needs to be that guy in a slot that you just can't cover with your third best cornerback. He needs to be that guy that is uncoverable in the red zone. At this point, he just isn't. He's not getting a ton of separation. Obviously, he got open on his touchdown catch today, but he just isn't looking like the guy he has been. And he has to be for this offense to get going. You lose Jordy Nelson, and you need a guy like Randall Cobb to step up. You just have to. And so far, basically all season, he has struggled to do that. And I hate to say that maybe he isn't, you know, number one receiver capable. You know, there were people this offseason arguing that you don't give a slot receiver number one wide receiver money. And Ross, you and I were both against that camp. We both thought he was worth the money, that you had to keep Randall Cobb around. And he's kind of proven us wrong a little bit this season. He has not been able to take the spot, like to be the number one guy and make the most of it. He's seen a really big dip in his production without Jordy Nelson on the outside to take some coverage away from him. And it's unfortunate.
I still stand by what we said, though. I mean, with Nelson, Cobb is still, you know, elite as far as slot receivers go. I don't think you can – it's just hard to design, you know. Just because Jordy Nelson being gone and he hasn't played well maybe because of injury doesn't mean that it's not worth $10 million a year to have Randall Cobb when you have Jordy Nelson. And obviously that's what they thought they had going into the season. You know, losing Nelson took so much of that Randall Cobb out of the backfield stuff away as well. You know, like you and I were saying, could you just imagine a scenario with Ty Montgomery in the slot with, you know, Randall at tailback with Adams and Nelson outside? It's just, you can't do that stuff when Ty Montgomery's hurt, and you can't do that stuff when Jordy Nelson's injured as well. And Jordy Nelson's not coming back this season, but I guess I'll wait and see a little bit more before I call that contract a bust, especially with how high I anticipate the salary cap going. Let's move forward now and do a little previewing. Obviously, it is Thanksgiving with a 4 somewhere in there. That's a hashtag. We'll just, for the purposes of not really being able to visually explain a hashtag over a podcast, we'll call it Favre'sgiving. So, Ryan, tell me what you're doing for Favre'sgiving, and I guess what it means to you to see Favre come back and have his jersey retired.
I mean, obviously, this is big. This is a pretty big event, not only for the Packers in the state of Wisconsin. Brett Favre was a huge part of getting the Packers back to respectability, getting them back to an organization that is as highly thought of as it is today. I'll be watching with the girlfriend's family here in Wisconsin, a big group of Packer fans, watching the game after Thanksgiving dinner, and it's probably going to get a little small for me. I would hopefully they televise as much of the ceremony. Well, I obviously want to see as much of that stuff happen. You want to see a little bit of his appearance on the field. But looks like Bart Starr is hopefully going to be able to show up. It's going to be a special ceremony. It's a big event. This is kind of the end of the Favre era. Brett Favre has been basically a part of both of our Packer fandom since we got started. Obviously with the hiccup there in New York and Minnesota, but he's a big part of my lifetime as a Packer fan, and this is kind of the icing on the cake for that. This is, you know, obviously Favre is still going to be around after this, but this is kind of the cap on it. This is the finish. This is the end. Obviously, there's going to be no more. Hey, what if this team calls Brett Favre because their starting quarterback and their backup quarterback went out? He's going into he's in the Packers Hall of Fame. He's getting his number retired this week, and it's going to be a big event, and I'm excited for it. I'm going to get a little bit emotional, and we'll see how it goes. Thanksgiving's my favorite day of the year, and this is going to just make it a little bit better.
I agree. Not that I'm anti-Favre. I don't really want to get into this, but you're a little bit more on the Favre side than I am. I'm happy to see it. I'm happy that he's back. I'm certainly happy that he's going to, you know, be honored, and in no way, shape, or form does he not deserve to be in the Packers Hall of Fame. He, Mike Holmgren, Reggie White, and Ron Wolf, are kind of the reason that you and I are Packers fans. I mean, I always tell the story, which is true, about, you know, thinking that Green Bay was North Dakota State on the TV because they both wear the same colors, and I was 4 or 5 years old. But at the same time, you know, maybe young Ross and young Ryan wouldn't have stuck with a team that didn't just win the Super Bowl and fall in love with a quarterback that wasn't Brett Favre. And no matter, you know, where he went to play after that, no matter what pictures he did or did not send, it doesn't matter. You always have to appreciate him for that, and I do, and I'm excited to see that number 4 go up on the facade. Interesting to see what he has to say, and honestly, I hope he's a little bit more a part of what goes on in Green Bay moving forward, as you know, he hasn't really been around much since retiring from the Vikings, and that's understandable. I mean, he was a Viking, and he retired, you know, with them and not with Green Bay. But hopefully this reconciliation and the Packers Hall of Fame induction ceremony, his number being retired on Thursday, and of course, you know, this will be the year that he goes into Canton, because it has been 5 years since his retirement. Hopefully all those things can kind of bring Favre back into the fold, and he can sort of be around a little bit more in the same sort of way that Bart Starr has been such a part of the family, you know, for the better part of these last 60 years, and certainly a reason why Starr is so widely respected and beloved by the Packer faithful, and so cool that he is going to be back. Ryan, let's talk a little about the actual game. It certainly wouldn't be a very good look for the Packers to have Favre retire his number in a losing effort to the rival Chicago Bears. They were able to get a tight win over Oakland today. Jay Cutler seems to be having a, you know, slightly better year than normal. The defense doesn't look as completely inept as it did a season ago. And the Bears have a young running back by the name of Jeremy Langford that's really kind of making the people believe after they lost Matt Forte to significant injury. What excites you and what worries you about this upcoming game against Chicago?
Well, the worry, I think, has to be these offensive struggles we've been seeing. I think I do think that Eddie Lacy is going to keep it rolling, keep what he had going against Minnesota going against Chicago. But Like you said, the Bears' defense is not a pushover. It's not the pushover we thought we were going to have coming into the season. You know, where a bad defense was switching schemes, and it was going to take a while to shift. The Bears' defense has not been a disaster. That kind of sounds like an insult, but they're better than we thought they would be. The Packers were able to score 31 points in that opening week win down at Soldier Field. You know, I don't think this game at home is going to be a 45-50 point game. I don't think it's going to be the runaway blowout that we saw last season at Lambeau. I think this is going to be a little bit tighter. I think the way the Packers offense is playing, I don't think I'm in a position to say that the Packers are going to blow anybody out. I'm a little bit worried that the Packers offense is going to keep these struggles going. Obviously, we had a little bit of an uptick against Minnesota. Hopefully, that continues. But I'm worried that that's going to keep going. What excites me is the fact that this pass rush seemed to reappear. It seems to me that those three games where they didn't record a sack and they struggled a little bit struggled a lot against the Panthers and the Broncos. It seems like that was a bit of a fluke. It looks like they've come back. They've been able to play well against the Lions, play really well against the Vikings today, and I think they're going to be able to stifle whatever Chicago's got going on offense. Obviously, Langford has been an admirable fill-in for Matt Forte, and Jay Cutler hasn't done a whole lot of a bad Jay Cutlering. I think that probably ends on Thanksgiving against the Packers. I think the way this defense is going, they're going to force him into some bad Jay Cutler plays. I'm excited to see the defense roll against this Bears offense. I still don't think that offensive line is very good, and I think Mike Daniels and Dayton Jones and Clay Matthews and B.J. Roger are going to push them around and impose their will a little bit. I don't think that the Bears offense is going to be very effective. They are probably going to put up some points, but I think the Packers defense is going to kind of dictate this game and hopefully give the Packers offense a little bit more time to get things right.
Yeah, I'm excited about the game too. I mean, I think this might be possibly the chance to see that blowout. We've been waiting for one all season long. I mean, they were every freaking week last year at Lambeau Field. I think you have a chance maybe to get going on all cylinders. You get Eddie Lacy kind of moving a little bit. Maybe Rodgers starts to feel a little bit more comfortable. You get Montgomery back. You maybe do a little bit of unleashing the Janus, who, you know, was pretty effective today, drawing a long pass interference penalty, and certainly in the kick return game. But the Packers maybe can get a little bit healthy. Hopefully we get good news on... By the way, shout to J.C. Treader for just making me completely forget that Corey Linsley went out of the game. You know, maybe it's a good idea to give Micah Hyde a little bit of rest. He's been dinged up all season long, it seems like. Quentin Rollins is a very capable dime guy. Obviously, with, you know, Hayward, Shields, and Randall being healthy, you have a nickelback. There's absolutely nothing wrong with using Burnett and Haha at the safety positions. We can afford to give Micah Hyde, you know, a game off, maybe even give him the Lions game off and you know, get him healthy for that matchup with Dallas down the road. Ryan, what is your prediction for the Bears game?
I have a very similar prediction as far as the score goes to the game today. I think it's going to be Packers 30. Bears 20. I think it's a 10-point win. I don't think we quite get there by two touchdowns. I think it's, but I do think it's a two-possession game. Similar score to the first game, that week one game also. 30-20 is my prediction.
I'm going to go a little bit wider. 41-17 Pack. I don't want to sound like I'm overreacting to what's gone on here today, but this is a talented football team. They played like it today. And the offense is only going to get better. They have young players, And, you know, Aaron Rodgers seems to be at least working his way into getting better. And they're finally, you know, not, and this was the case against Detroit too, but they're finally not playing a really good defense. So hopefully, you know, Green Bay can start moving the ball a little bit against defenses that aren't really highly ranked in the league. We want to thank you guys, as always, for listening. As always, we appreciate a subscription to the Packers Talk Network on iTunes. It helps, you know, how early we come up on searches. When people do go on iTunes and search Packers or Aaron Rodgers or whatever. If you like the show, ours or any of the other shows brought to you by the talented folks at the Packers Talk Network, give us a rating. 5 stars is great. We really appreciate those. And you can follow the show on Twitter at From the Benches. You can follow the network at Packers Talk. You can follow me at Ross Uglum. And you can follow Ryan
at Hillisland 358.
Guys, thanks again for listening, and go Pack Go.
From the Benches. From the Benches.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.